founded in 1991 by patients, the FSH Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSH Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of men, women, and children affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSH Society Radio. Welcome one and all to FSH Society Radio. Thanks for being here. Thanks for joining me. Glad you can be with me for another installment of FSH Society Radio. Want to get in touch with me? You can do that. There's a whole bunch of ways, actually, that you can do that. You can email me if you'd like. You can do that. You can email FSH at FSHSociety.org. That's like the show email. Then, of course, we have the personal email of myself, which I have no problem giving out. You can reach me directly even during the show. That's recroomshow@gmail.com. If you want to bother me a little bit, I would love it. Follow the show here on Twitter and as well as the FSH Society at FSH Society. And of course, the website, FSHSociety.org. All here for you. And I have the chat room up and running right now, so you can sprinkle in your thoughts, chat with other listeners. We have some people already in there, so I'm glad that you're utilizing that tool. Had a struggle getting that up and going last month when we had the first episode, but we got the kinks worked out in that. I hope I'm coming in loud and clear for you. And we have great guests tonight. We have the one and only great broadcaster from the Brooklyn Nets and also the voice of FSHD. He is Chris Carino. And he also is going to talk about his Chris Carino Foundation, as well as his personal, you know, battle and dealing with FSH. And he's gonna join us today. I'm really excited to have him, man. He's gonna join us at about quarter past the hour here. So stay tuned for that. In the meanwhile, I guess you just have me to listen to for right now. Also, you can dial in the show at 949-270-5953. You can listen to the show, I guess, that way as well. And if you want to be in the caller queue for me to answer your call, all you got to do is dial 1. If they don't prompt you to do that, that'll get you in the queue and give me a little trigger that you're ready to talk for a little while. So there's a whole bunch of ways to talk, to chat. You can do that. This is really, I mean, selfishly, I do enjoy doing this kind of work. I love podcast work. I love doing this show. This is now basically the only show I'm really engulfed with and doing, and I'm so happy to do it, and I'm so happy to bring our FSH community together, if it's the people directly affected with the disease, family members, caregivers, anybody. Everybody's welcome here, and we really want to hear either your story or your thoughts or maybe a question. I'm not a doctor. You know, I can't give you any treatment advice, but I can speak from the advice of a patient. I mean, I was just diagnosed in November-ish. That's kind of when my whole trip started, so to speak. And this is where I am already, working with the FSH Society and volunteering and of course, doing this great show. So I'm glad I can bring it. Glad I can be here with you all. A little bit, too, is that I like to take this first, like, 15 minutes, obviously, to tell you how to get a hold of me and get a hold of the show and follow the show, but also sprinkle a little bit of myself, little monologue, as maybe they say in the business. And I know we're all trying to definitely raise money and trying to think of unique ways to do so. And, you know, right now is a great time to do that because there's a big spring, you know, a push between now and when the FSH, or World FSHD Day is, and that's June 20th. And, you know, there's this effort going on right now with FSH Society of kind of matching all our donations. And with that in mind, like, for instance, at my work where I have a day job, we have this slide into summer Sloppy Joe luncheon where people brought in, you know, food and just kind of had kind of like a picnic style lunch, and we all gathered together, kind of builds camaraderie and morale at the workplace. But I decided to add a little spin on it. I live in Milwaukee area, so big Brewer fans around here mostly. There are some Cub ones as well, unfortunately. As I say that, of course, being a Brewer fan. And I put together this really cool, at least I thought it was cool, Brewers gift basket with Brewer tickets and a parking pass and some other great Brewers memorabilia, a couple bobbleheads in there that are collector's items and stuff. And put together something so enticing that I was hoping to raise some money with it. And we ran a raffle at my work during this lunch. And we raised about, $250 with this basket. So I was happy to do that. So those are the kind of things that if we can kind of all work in our little corners of the world and generate that. And of course, we're going to send our money here over to FSH Society. And with that matching is just going to be great that donation can increase even more. If you missed last week's show, you can still listen to that, by the way, as we move along. We had on George Pollock, and he talked in great detail about the excellent ride he's going on. He's doing the RAM, the Race Across America, starts in June coming up, and he starts on Oceanside, California, goes to Annapolis, Maryland, and it's this huge event, I believe, starting on June 17th, runs to about June 24th. And we talked about the struggles of training. We talked about him wanting to, be ready for this event, and he wasn't sure. And we had some great questions and some interesting dialogue going back and forth, because I always thought it was so fascinating listening to how he was training and how he was getting himself ready, and even like emotionally. So it was a great interview. And I think that is so important for those of us that have FSH, is that it's the drive to want to keep moving or keep doing whatever we can to ward it off or to fight it off the best we possibly can. And I bring this up because just yesterday, well, it started last week, where I decided to get this physical assessment of myself to see what I could do, like with a personal trainer type person. And this is a gentleman that works at a very highly regarded facility near where I live called Next Level, which is NX Level. So you want to look it up, and it's a nice free plug for them. And NFL players train there as well, like J.J. Watt and others train there, and some other athletes, and then up-and-coming athletes, even as young as 12 years old, can start there. And it's just moderate, training, getting you in shape, and it's to whatever degree you want to go into it, and you get evaluated. So I was in for my assessment and trying to explain to this gentleman, even though I had a long conversation prior, of the limitations already, that I was having to deal with. And I think he knew, I think he was comfortable with it. I think he wanted to, understand the best he could. So then, of course, he could help me. But I could honestly say there is no question that there was a little bit of, a little separation of what I was telling him. And then finally, when we did the first workout, which was yesterday, and needless to say, I am sore. Oh my gosh. To do those kind of exercises and workout routine of any kind. I mean, I'm 41, so I'm not a spring chicken, granted, but it just really worked me well. And we're doing certain exercises where, like my right hand is down all the way on the turf, and then I reach up to the sky, well, halfway there for me. And it's like, it was just remarkable. I could see it in his face, like, wow, that's it. That's all you got. I'm even doing it now. I almost think that we have to have me simulcasted so you could see the video of myself doing these things. And it was just, it's always interesting to me to see people's reactions, in a way, to say, hey, this is kind of real. This is a struggle, because you can't really see it on me otherwise. It's not like I walk around with my shirt off all the time, and people can notice it maybe in my back, or notice that something's off. But it's until I start pushing myself and those physical limitations, start to get stretched, I think that's where things kind of get, a little interesting, so to speak. So either way. So that's kind of my story, my start of this journey, kind of physically push myself to get in there. I mean, this time last year, I was biking constantly. I was trying to work out. I was actually thinking to myself, I'm going to build muscle in my arms and whatnot. I'm lucky I didn't hurt myself, because I had no idea what I was actually fighting against until now. So for those out there exercising, working hard, trying to get in the gym, trying to find places, I hope you find a place like I did, like Next Level, and you can be comfortable there and push your limits. Or heck, even if it's at home, I think we all have to kind of stay loose, you know, stay vibrant. And that's not always the easiest thing. I also wanted to mention this, too, since I was talking about George Pollack. To mark this year's World FSHD Day on June 20th, we're all asking to help raise global visibility and support for the FSH Society. George Pollack and Team FSHD Cycling are offering an amazing opportunity to raise awareness. As Team FSHD Cycling races 3,000 miles across the continent in the Race Across America this June 17th to the 24th, the live video stream will get millions of hits. We want the world to see the people who they are racing for, the men, the women, and the children who live with FSHD. To that end, I am reaching out to all to challenge your family, friends, associates to help raise much-needed dollars in honor of someone you care about. Your honoree's photo will be displayed on the side of the Team FSHD cycling support van as it drives across America, helping to raise awareness in the most personal way about why this cause matters. The more you raise, the larger the photo. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. So get your photos in to the Team FSHD Cycling Race Across America supports van by sending in a photo and donation, and the deadline is June 7th. The instructions, I believe all the links are there on fshsociety.org. So go ahead and do that, and let's get those pictures up. Let's kind of show, let's put a face to this, even though I think it's really cool that the World FSH Day, FSHD Day, has that nice orange color, which is my favorite color, and the cool cricket smile, as I call it. So I kind of like it. We have that going for us as well, a great logo. So we have that going on. Why don't we take our first break as we're getting ready to bring in our featured guest, Chris Corino, in to talk a little bit about NBA, being a broadcaster, and I don't want to say struggles, but, you know, living with FSHD. You're listening to the FSH Society Radio Show.
You're listening to FSH Society Radio. Hey everyone, this is Tim, host of FSH Society Radio. And get this, in 2014, a Dutch team reported that aerobic exercise training and cognitive behavioral therapy decreased fatigue and improved the quality of life significantly for FSHD patients. This suggests a marked impact in slowing the degeneration of affected muscles. So I don't want to hear any excuses. You can get out there, get active, start exercising, and let's start fighting this thing. Hi, this is Tim again, and have you been recently diagnosed with FSHD and kind of trying to search for answers? I mean, there's so many questions. Where do you go? Well, go to fshsociety.org. Join the FSH Society. Get educated, because knowledge is power. Get active. Connect with local members. Volunteer for research and donate, because without you, we can't fight this. Go to fshsociety.org.
Hey, welcome back. Welcome back to the show, FSH Society Radio here. I'm Tim, your host, and we're getting ready for our featured guest, Chris Corino, the voice of the Brooklyn Nets and FSHD. He also is going to talk about the Chris Corino Foundation and the events and the great things he's doing there. So I'm really excited to have him on, because I'm kind of a sports nut, broadcast dork is what I call myself. I love listening to great broadcasters, and he is definitely on my list of great broadcasters and great voices. And the fact that he has what I have is just pretty cool to me. So I'm glad we could get him in and have him chit-chat with us for a while. So looking forward to having him in. If you want to, you can go ahead and jump onto that chat room through Blog Talk Radio, chat in your questions, comments, and everybody. So really looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say. Visit fshsociety.org. Follow us on Twitter at fshsociety, Facebook as well, all linked through the website. You can contact FSH at fshsociety.org. Maybe one too many apps in there. You can also call the show at 949-270-5953. You can also, guess what? You can also reach me directly, yes. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Rec Room Show. Or you can send me emails if you'd like, if you just want to chat with me, either in the studio or after. If you have questions for me, that's recroomshow@gmail.com, which is kind of what I nickname my studio down here where I do a lot of my fun work like this. So, yeah, glad we can do it. So we're approaching that time. We're always in this lovely hope and can't wait pattern of, yes, I really can't wait to hear our featured guest and what he has to say. You know, the thing is, and you know, maybe we should start like a over-under betting pool or something of how many times by accident I'm going to say New Jersey Nets, because growing up, that's kind of what I said, you know, all the time was that. So, yeah, I mean, the way I see it, though, you know, basketball is not my highest top end sport, granted, but it is definitely one that I truly enjoy. And I guess I liked it more when I was younger and a little bit less now that I'm older. I love hockey. That's probably my number one. I know Stanley Cup's on. I believe the game's on like right now. So if someone wants to go ahead and tell me the score on the chat room, that would be great. Just curious on there. If you want to call into the show, we'll love to have you talk about your story. And you know, because at this moment in time, as a host goes, we're always hoping that the guest is still available for us, waiting, hoping. Chris hasn't called in yet. Well, hey, we'll be patient. Not a problem. So if you want to use this time to maybe tell your story, talk a little bit, feel free to do so. The number here in the studio is 949-270-5953. So to kind of maybe a little bit of my story, I don't always like to – oh, wait, here we go. I'm a baseball person myself, says June Kinoshita. She's in the chat room. Thanks for adding some dialogue. It's funny that you say that, June, because I am glad that you are a baseball person. I just left my oldest son's baseball game. We just finished coaching this evening. I finished coaching this evening. He finished playing. They did lose, but it was a hard-fought battle. But I do love baseball. It's probably my number one for sure. So that's kind of cool that you enjoy it yourself. So, yeah, I mean, I'm doing a whole bunch of things. You know, I'm jumping from one thing and one kind of sport to another. So, actually, it looks like Chris is calling in. So why don't we go ahead and welcome him in. He is Chris Carino. He's the voice of the Brooklyn Nets and FSHD. He has the Chris Carino Foundation we're going to talk about today. Hello, Mr. Carino. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Tim. How are you?
I am doing great, sir. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for taking the time to share your story and talk about your foundation. I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, I'm not a huge Brooklyn Nets fan. In fact, I'm trying very hard not to say New Jersey Nets right now. And I told the people that are in the chat room, why don't you do an over-under of how many times I trip over that, even though it's been a number of years that it's gone now to Brooklyn. But,
yeah,
you know.
So, try not to say it too much, because then I might say it, and then I'd be in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want you to do that. Yeah, you have a lot more writing on that error than I do. So tell us a little bit. I guess, you know, I'm kind of a broadcast dork, as in, like, I love broadcasters, so I kind of admire what you do and all the other great broadcasters that are out there. When did you start to realize that you had a passion for broadcasting?
Cool. Well, when I had a passion for it, I don't know. I don't know if I can pinpoint that point.
Yeah.
But I could say this, that when I probably was around 10 or 11 years old, my dad gave me a tape recorder and some blank cassettes. And he had worked as a recording engineer, and he gave me a tape recorder and some blank cassettes. And he said, and I said, well, you know, what am I going to do with this? And he said, well, you just, you know, have some fun. You know, it's kind of cool to to record your voice and listen to it and things like that. And I was a huge sports fan as a kid, especially at that time in my life. And what I chose to do was put the blank cassette in the cassette machine, get in front of a TV in a quiet room, put the sound down, and I would call the play-by-play of the games that were on TV. And I did this for, you know, who knows how many times. I thankfully don't have those tapes anymore because I don't think they were probably very good. But, yeah, so that's kind of where it started for me. And then I got into public speaking. I remember, you know, they say that people have this fear of public speaking, right? It's the number two. It's the most common fear in the world. They say number two is death, right? So people they're more afraid of dying sometimes than they are speaking in front of a group. And I do remember vividly being in the eighth grade, and I was asked to do a reading at Mass, on a Christmas Eve Mass. And I just remember there were so many people in the church. The church we were in was there was an altar at the front of a gymnasium, and they used to, where we played basketball, and they set up, you know, chairs, and there were literally so many people packed into this gymnasium that they were going up the staircase in the back of the gymnasium. I vividly see it right now. And here I was in eighth grade, and I got up there, and I did a reading at this Christmas Eve Mass. And I remember just getting a real jolt of energy out of it, that I loved doing it. I enjoyed it. And I said, boy, this is what I need to do. I need to communicate with people. I need to speak to people. This is what I think I can do for the rest of my life. And I went to high school. I was competitive in speech and debate. Then went on to college and went immediately to the radio station. The first week I was at Fordham University, I signed up for a sports workshop, because you could have gone sports, news, or music. And I signed up for a sports workshop, and there I met the great Marty Glickman, who was a legendary sportscaster. At the time, he was the New York Jets radio announcer, but he had been the Giants radio announcer for many years. He had been the Knicks radio announcer for many years. And what he would do is he would come in every Tuesday. I called it Tuesdays with Marty. And he would talk to the sports department. He would listen to their tapes. He would tell stories about the business. He would train us to be future sportscasters. And I sat in the back of the room that first day, the first week, and listened to him critique tapes and talk about play-by-play, and realized that I knew nothing about how to do play-by-play. And I had to learn. There could not have been a better teacher for what I do now than Marty Glickman. And I was fortunate enough to learn from him for 4 years, and it served me well. And obviously, you know, it took a while. It took me, you know, when I was a senior in college, I was named the MSG Network at a contest to find the best college radio play-by-play man in the tri-state area here in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. And every school in the area got to submit two tapes, two students. And in my senior year, I won. And I got to call a Knicks game on the radio. Walt Frazier was my partner. I did a quarter of the game. And, you know, that started it all. But I wouldn't, being the business, and as difficult a business as it is to break into, I would not get on the air professionally doing play-by-play for another 6 years. And, you know, I waited it out, and now I'm in my I'll be starting this year my 17th season as the Nets radio voice.
17 seasons. That's fantastic. Did you think that you would be in it that long when you started? Because you're talking about how competitive that it is?
I think – I think the hard part is sometimes getting the opportunity. And if you look around the league, many of the play-by-play guys for the teams, if they're good, which you normally have to be to get that job, they hold on to that job for a long time. And that's what makes it even more difficult to get, because guys stay in this job for 30, 40 years.
Right.
So, you know, I don't intend on letting it go without a fight.
Good for you. Good for
you. And
then,
you know, then I add to it. I'm fortunate enough that the Nets allow me to do other things. And I think they see the value in me being a national broadcaster, that that it reflects well on them. And so they allow me to miss a few games here and there to do some national stuff. So I do a national broadcast for Compass Media Network's NFL broadcast every week. So every Sunday during the NFL season, I do a game. And then I do the NCAA tournament for Westwood One in the first two rounds. So, you know, I'm really fortunate professionally to work with great people at the Nets who understand the value of allowing me to do other things. And then I work for some cool people elsewhere, and I get to kind of do it all.
Yeah. Cause I was obviously trying to do some homework on you a little bit, and it looks like, now correct me if I'm wrong, you've obviously done NBA, you currently are doing that. But you, you look like you also have done some MLB and obviously some NFL games, I believe you mentioned, and the Olympics in 08.
Yeah, with a company called Compass Media, I've been able to do they had a package of Major League Baseball games a few years back, and they asked me to do some games, and I was able to do that. I've done NFL. I've done college basketball for them. I've done college football for them. This year I got to go to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and do a game down there when Alabama played Texas A&M. I got to go to Happy Valley to do a Penn State-Iowa game. So – I've done the Olympics for NBC three times. I've never actually been to the Olympics. I do them off a TV monitor. The first 2 years, I actually did them. They set up their voiceover venues on the stage, Studio 8H in Rockefeller Center, which is better known as the Saturday Night Live studio. So I was able to – I was working every day from basically where they do the monologue of Saturday Night Live. So that was pretty cool. And and doing the NBA, and I've done international games for NBC and for ESPN and for NBA TV, and I've been blessed to do a lot of different things. And this year, for the Olympics, I did handball, was interesting. Yeah, team handball, you know, the European stuff.
How do you get into the rules that quickly to be able to, because I assume you got to know at least the gist of what the game's about and how it's being played in order to call it to some degree, right? I mean, you're kind of doing a crash course.
It's one of those things that, you know, I'm a play-by-play guy. So as long as I know the rules and I get the rhythm of the game, which, you know, I just worked on that prior to the Olympics. I mean, I had some, they didn't tell me like the day before, like, you know, I had some time to prepare. And,
that's good. Yeah.
And, you know, yeah. And I had great people I was working with. Dawn Allen-Jalewis was my color commentator, and she had been on a U.S. handball Olympic team in 1996. And we had a statistician. He was there to do stats. He turned out to be more like an advisor to me. He was actually Gabe Goodrow, who was the goalie for the national team, United States national team, who they were not in the Olympics. But he was there to kind of support us. And Gabe was great, you know, just kind of giving me hand signals. And we had little signs he would put up when things would happen, you know, in the game. After a few days, I got the hang of it. And I pride myself on thinking by the time the gold medal game came around, you thought I'd been watching handball my whole life. So.
what's your favorite sport to broadcast out of all the ones you've done, even including handball?
I mean, listen, I love the NBA. The NBA is still what I'm passionate about, but I'm passionate about the NFL too. I enjoy doing NFL games every Sunday because every Sunday is an event. It doesn't matter where the teams are in the standings. There's this incredible energy around the stadium. you know, and then how could I, you know, leave out the NCAA tournament? I mean, the emotion of that and, right. And how hard those kids play, man, it's all great. I it's like picking, you know, like they always say, like, who's your favorite kid? I can't. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I spend more time with my NBA child, but I love them all.
You love them all. I like that. I like that answer. The part of broadcasting, you know, that you said you were just get, like when you did the first public speaking, you mentioned how you felt that energy. I can only imagine that that's probably magnified when you're doing this kind of broadcast, especially for the NBA, as long as you have. Can you describe kind of what's that feeling like right before you go live? What's that energy like for you?
You do feed off the environment that you're in. I think the bigger the game, the more the butterflies. You're in a in a charged environment like an NBA playoff game. You know, you feel it. There's an anticipation. Sometimes in those Olympic games where I'm doing a game off a TV monitor, or if I do some of that for NBA TV as well, some international stuff that they'll call me in to do, it doesn't have that same feeling. It's a strange feeling because you're in a tunnel. You're so blocked out. It's so quiet that sometimes all you can think about is the fact that I'm going on and what I'm going to say. It's funny because when I did that Nick game as a college student, when I was describing to you before, and obviously being a 21-year-old kid at the time, getting a chance to do an NBA game with Walt Frazier sitting next to me. I remember the first play, and I remember it was a Patrick Ewing turnaround shot from the elbow. He made the shot, he got fouled, and I complete the call, and Walt jumps in, and he gives his commentary on the play, and then he turns to me and he goes, "Chris, you're supposed to have gardenitis. You don't sound nervous at all." And I said to him, I have the butterflies, but it's good to have the butterflies. It keeps you, you know, it keeps you on your toes. You know, I think if you don't have that little flutter, if you don't have that little bit of excitement, then you're going to be a little flat on the air. I think you need to, you need to come through. But I'll tell you, when you're on the radio and even on television, because I've done some, you know, I do some TV every once in a while as well. The thing is, you don't see your audience. And you don't know. Somebody may have not even turned your mic on. You might not even be on the air. There's no difference. You're just talking. And you're doing they say go and you do your job. And there's more of that buzz that you get to, for instance, at my foundation dinner every year. And I get up in front of a room of, you know, between 400 and 500 people. And I speak for 20 minutes without notes. And that is a different type of feeling. Obviously, that's more personal. But if I was to do that, you know, I've gotten up and spoken to high school students, college students, people that, you know, they bring out in groups for me to speak to at the Nets games or whatever it may be, you know, before a game in the afternoon. And there may be 500 people. There may be 1,000 people. That's a much different feeling because of the component that you're looking at people. And in some ways it's easier because you're getting feedback. You know, you can see if you're connecting with them immediately. And while you're speaking, you can see if you're connecting with them. But there's almost more nerves there because you have all eyes on you. Whereas you're on the radio or you're on TV, the eyes aren't on you. You have no idea if you're talking to one person or a million people. You know, you have no idea. So I get a charge out of both. And I do get that feeling out of both.
Listening to FSH Society Radio, we're talking to Chris Carino. He's the voice of the Brooklyn Nets and FSHD, and he has a great society we're going to talk about soon, the Chris Carino Foundation. You have FSHD as well as I do. So to me, that's where I drew that immediate connection when I Googled. This is admittedly what I Googled, Chris. I Googled famous people with FSHD. You were number one on that. Did you know that? So I thought, well, this guy's a broadcaster, which I love that, and he has this. Wow, that's phenomenal. And then, of course, I read more about your foundation and then your career from that point.
Did anybody else come up, by the way?
Oh, go ahead.
did anybody else come up in your Google search, Tim?
I didn't go. I think you pretty much owned like the first page, you know, and that's when people go to page two on Google, right?
Lucky
so,
me.
Good for you, right? I mean, you know. So like with this disease, similar to myself, I mean, maybe, I'm not sure, but I'm going to ask you the question is, when did you kind of realize something, this is how I term it, something was off, you know, where the strength wasn't there or started to decline or something was different? Like for me, it was, hey, I can't do push-ups like that kid does over there, you know, and I didn't give it much thought when I was younger. When did those things start happening for you?
So you didn't have anybody in your family with it?
You know, I'm kind of a wild card. I am adopted, so I don't know my birth father, but my birth mother, I do, you know, and I've heard nothing about, you know, anything being in the family line. Yeah.
Yeah.
So well, I'm not sure.
And that was the reason that, you know, we didn't know anybody in our family with it. So when I was diagnosed when I was 23, but, and I probably started to see something, like you say, off probably a few years prior to that. Mm-hmm. I was always very athletic. I played a lot of sports. I really enjoyed partaking in sports, and I would play recreational softball, basketball, and suddenly I just, you know, I couldn't run the way I used to. The ball just, you know, basketball, that just seemed heavier in my hands. And I let that go on for a few years before I finally, you know, I would try to run and sometimes my leg would give out and I'd fall. And I go, you know, something's not, I got to go to a doctor, you know. But in hindsight, when you look back years before that, I remember I had gone to an orthodontist when I was about, I don't even remember when it was. Maybe I was 12 or 13 years old. And he said, you have weak lips. And he was giving me exercises to do to try and, you know, strengthen my lips.
Then
when I was in high school, I remember going to I don't know if it was just a routine, like sports physical or something in the high school with the nurse. And they said, scoliosis. And I heard her say, they were looking at my back and they said, scoliosis positive. And then they suggested I go see my pediatrician. And I went to the doctor. And he said, well, you know, your right shoulder is lower than your left shoulder, but I don't see scoliosis. So in hindsight, the signs were there early on, but it didn't, that moment of truth didn't come until I was 23 or 24.
Yeah, I think I shared those same kind of things where if I look back, I can say, oh yeah, those are the plots in my lifeline or the little dots you could put, you know, like, yep, there was probably a moment that there was something there, but without having the knowledge I have now, there's no way I would have put it together then. I know that my mom currently, you know, she kind of, I sense kind of almost beats herself up, which I think that some parents maybe deal with that where they didn't catch it, you know? And then my advice is always, well, I still would have lived like I've lived. I still would have tried all the sports.
Yeah.
I still would have pushed myself.
Well,
I still would have done everything I did.
And probably that was a good thing, you know, had you known early on and you might have stopped doing those things. And I don't think those things hurt you and you would have denied yourself of that. And unfortunately, because there is no treatment or cure, you know, there was nothing you could do. So You know, you go through that. If you have a child, if your child and you have a chance of passing on to your child, if you know, that question of do you get your child tested or not? Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to wait till you see signs, there's no real advantage to it, I don't think, unless there was something that they could take or they could do that
right.
would help. Otherwise, you know, why put that label until you need to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was actually the advice of my muscular dystrophy specialist that I've been seeing. And, you know, we mentioned that, you know, about passing on to the kids. And I have two boys. And, you know, he told me, and I would be probably the best person to pick up on the signs early on. And then unless mm-hmm. you see those things, don't worry about it. He almost used the term like they'd be blackballed in a way. If they're out there and they're tested for this and they test for other things, then that could lead to other problems. So just, you know, only if you see something, and you know, there's no need for concern. And that's
it
hard to hear.
Be, yeah,
you know,
it could be a pre-existing. It could be a pre-existing condition if they're tested and they're positive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then, you know, that leads to whole insurance issues and whatnot. And then to have them deal with that at such a young age is kind of ridiculous. And I know that you have a son as well. And, you know, that was going to be one of my questions down the line is I know for me, this has been kind of early, the diagnosis. So I'm trying to obviously, deal with a lot of different emotions and feelings. And some of that was, you know, my feelings about passing on to my kids and guilt and, you know, what if I do and this and that, and, you know, how do you handle that? So I guess from me, father, to you, a father, you know, if you had to speak to other parents out there that maybe are at that crossroads, what advice would you give?
And I understand it. I know parents who have passed it down, and even parents that have passed it down that don't have it, that feel this guilt, but there's no,
sure.
You know, I want to refer to that great movie with Robin Williams and Matt Damon, Good Will Hunting, when they're in therapy and Robin Williams just keeps telling Matt Damon, you know, this is not your fault. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, I know. It's not my fault. And he just kept repeating it to him because you could tell that Matt Damon was saying it. He like, yeah, I know. But he really, in the deep down, he didn't forgive himself for certain things in his life, but they weren't his fault. And I think that's kind of the way I see it with all of us. I mean, even sometimes you can't help but when you're going through this and you start to feel some more weakness and things progress a little bit, sometimes where you hit a threshold and it becomes noticeable, as opposed to gradual, which is what we all go through. But you almost put this blame on yourself. Like, is there something I should have been doing? You know, should I have been eating better? Should I have taken more vitamins? Could I have slowed this down? And you got to realize it's not your fault.
Right.
This is something that has happened. And, you know, maybe you, in your case, I don't know. In your case, maybe you didn't know the risks when you had your child. Some people didn't know the risks.
Yeah, it didn't
when they
at
had
all,
their
right?
children. And some people did and decided to do it anyway, as we did. You know, my wife Laura and I wanted to have a child, and it was something that, you know, we just felt really strongly about, and we felt, well, if he's burdened with this, we'll deal with that, and if he's not, great, and we won't really roll the dice more than once.
Right, sure.
And I know there's ways now I don't know exactly how it's done, but I know they can remove embryos or something and test and before you actually have the pregnancy, I think now if you can go down that path and option if you're a young person that's going through this right now. But it's probably the hardest thing, and that's why it's hard. And I think that when it comes to your kids, that's when people get involved in, as I like to say, participating in our own rescue.
Right.
And I feel like it's the people that contact me and even people that are involved in our own organization, they got involved not when they got diagnosed, not when they've been going through it, but when their kid has, when suddenly
right.
their child has FSHD. That's when they jump into action and want to get involved and want to help and try and get more awareness and inform themselves on what's going on. That's what I find more than anything. And, you know, it's a complex issue that we can probably talk all night about, but it's probably
yeah.
one of the, it's probably one of the more difficult issues that people with this FSHD face.
Yeah, I do agree. It's definitely a tough topic that's already a tough topic, you know, just to deal with it in general, and then to add that on top. I know that you didn't make it really, I guess, public, lack of a better term, you know, that you had FSHD. Why was that, and what was the turning point when you decided to kind of come out and say, ta-da, here it is?
I think, and it's funny because I speak to a lot of people now who email me or call me that see the story or hear about my story, and they kind of tell me what they're going through, and it's so similar to what I went through that they try and hide it as long as they can. And I did it for a long time, and I probably had my reasons. I don't know how to express it completely, but I think there's a longing, especially with this kind of disease that you don't know mm-hmm. you have for about 20 years of your life, and then all of a sudden, bang, you know, you have it.
Yeah.
For 20 years, I was allowed to conjure up the beliefs and the dreams that I had and what I saw in my life and what it was going to be. And then suddenly you have to deal with this progressive muscle disease, and you don't know what it's going to do to your life. And you try and hang on to the normalcy as long as you can.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Pretend like there's nothing wrong, because you just want to extend it as far as you can. And then with me also, I didn't get involved. I don't think I'm kind of a support group kind of person anyway. but I almost didn't want to look into the future. I didn't want to look into that mirror that would show me someone that's 10 years ahead of me, 20 years ahead of me with this disease.
Right.
And that's still something I come to grips with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I think for all those reasons, people keep it quiet. And I think that's why I did, to a certain extent. I think you hide it as long as you can. You go, as long as I can make it look like, and now in hindsight, when I speak to people who are in that same boat, I look at it and I go, listen, I'm not one to talk here, because I did the same thing you were doing for so many years. So I'm not going to get on my high horse and say, hey, come
right.
clean. It's, you know, but what I will tell you, is that having gone through it, having gone public with it, and listen, vast majority of the people who are going through this don't go public with it the way I had to go public with it. You know, where I'm kind
true.
Not that I'm, you know, you said, you know, Googling famous people with FSHD. I don't consider myself famous. I mean, maybe when I'm walking around the Nets arena, people know who I am. So I had that little bit of fame in that little area, but I'm not by any means a, you know, if you have to explain who the person is, they're not famous. So I don't have those kind of delusions, but it still was something where to a group of people, I was a known quantity, and it was hard for me to, I didn't want them to see anything beyond what I had become famous for. And even in the industry, I didn't want it to affect me in a negative way, nor did I want it to affect me where, People would think I got something because people felt sorry for me or something. You know, I didn't want
mm-hmm.
people to think I couldn't do the job. Or think that that's, you know, that becomes the subject and maybe people don't want to always talk about it or, you know, it becomes that elephant in the room. But I think where it turned for me was, you know, this disease will progress and it's different for everybody. But I'm fortunate to be married to a wonderful woman who is very strong and only knows me with FSHD. And so when we met, I was still probably able to hide it a little bit. So I don't think it was evident right off the bat.
Yeah.
But I know pretty early on, I knew that this was a different kind of relationship and we were going to be mm-hmm. serious here and there was a future and I had to come yeah. clean. And, I think I did it, you know, I don't remember how long it was. And then definitely when it came time to talk about, you know, what it does to having children and things like that, that was another conversation that was early on. And despite all that, I mean, she wanted to be with me and stayed with
yeah.
me and married me and started mm-hmm. a family. So there was a lot of, she took a leap of faith.
Mm-hmm.
And when it gets to a point where now it's becoming difficult for me to do some things, it's different than it was when we first met. And she has the burden of helping me a lot of times and me leaning on her because I don't really talk about it with anybody else. Now it became where she looked at me and said, hey, this is, I know you're happy with just letting go under the radar and not talking about it, but I don't want to keep this to myself anymore. I want you to be open and honest with the people in our lives so that they can help us, you know, mm-hmm. that I don't have to feel like I'm going through that. We don't have to feel like we're going through this alone.
Right.
And it had been on my mind for years prior to that. I think it had been on my mind going back to when I got diagnosed that, you know, one day I'm going to make a name for myself in the media. Because at the time when I got diagnosed, I was just out of college. I was this award-winning sportscaster. I had my eye on the prize.
Mm-hmm.
So it was part of me was like, you know, when I make it big in this business, I'm going to step forward and I'm going to help try and find a cure for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to put my name on it and I'm going to be out there and I'm going to try and do something about it. That was on my mind for 20 years. And what happens is you never think you get to that point that you're big enough. Your name is big enough where you can make a difference and you're always procrastinating and waiting. And when my wife kind of, we had this sort of, you know, you say that, you know, for lack of a better term, that come to Jesus moment,
mm-hmm.
where she was challenging me to be more open about it. It's then when I said, you know, I never really talked to you about this, but I've always thought about starting a foundation and trying to maybe help people with it and trying to help myself. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go to a neurologist now, and he's going to tell me the same thing he told me 20 years ago, that there's no treatment, there's no cure, there's nothing you can do. So what can I do? I'll be open about it with my friends, and we'll start a foundation, and we'll see if we can help people. And that's where I thought I would have the most impact. And, you know, that's where we ended up, and that's kind of how I ended up right here.
When did you start the Chris Carino Foundation?
So it was 2010 when my wife and I had sort of had this moment and I told her about my ideas. And then it became where we started I started to talk to people about it. I mean, people, friends and close friends, people knew I had FSHD, but it was something where I just didn't really dwell on it. I didn't talk about it. You know, my radio partner on the Nets games, Tim Capshaw, is a good friend of mine who who always, you know, was around me and always helped me. So everybody that, you know, kind of had, it was, people were kind of like on a need to know basis. But I, so when I talked about it with my wife and I told her my idea, I really didn't know the first thing how to do it, but I knew that I would share it with people that were close to me. And I remember Tim saying to me, well, you know, this is great because so many people will want to help you, but you have to give them a way to help you. And I remember saying to another friend of mine, Chris Hughes, who's part of our board, who said, well, now that you said it, you got to do it. And it's not a matter of if you're going to help anyone, it's how many people you're going to help. And so suddenly I was now feeling a lot better about my decision and knowing that, well, we're going to do something good here. And all these people are going to want to help. And it's, and it really felt good. And it had this burden lifted off me, because I always tell people that talk to me about it, that I mentioned that were similar to me. I say, you know, when you have FSHD and you're trying to hide it, you now have two burdens, mm-hmm. the burden of living with it and the burden of hiding it. And if you can relieve yourself of one burden, it makes the other one a little easier to do, to deal with. And you'll come to that in your own time. And I came to it, and then I started to kind of look in what's out there. I knew about the FSH Society. In fact, I had not too many people know this, I had kind of typed a letter a little while prior to this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was, I want to say there was a, I think her name was Nancy Van Zandt, who used to be, I think it's June is the director now, but it used to be a woman named Nancy yes. Van Zandt. And I remember writing a letter, typing a letter to her.
Mm-hmm.
That was telling her who I was and that I was ready to get involved, and I never sent it. And now later on, here I am, and I said, you know, I want to investigate what's out there. And, you know, the society was out there, and they were, you know, doing a lot of good work. And but I realized there weren't many other groups. There was Friends of FSH Research, who do great mm-hmm. work out in Seattle, and there was the society. And I really felt like I needed to put my name on something, mm-hmm. that I was at that point where I needed to, this disease didn't have a face yet. Mm-hmm. And I thought that, you know, where I was in the media and everything, that, not that I was super famous, but that bring it out a little bit more, that I'd put my name on it, put my face on it. And that would become more of a story that can get some traction for this disease than me just telling my story and then raising the money for another organization. You know, even the MDA, I think there was a thing where right around this time too, I'd gone to an MDA clinic and I expressed to the MDA rep that who I was and that I was interested in maybe if they needed anyone to do any sort of, work on their behalf in terms of speaking to whatever government agency, wherever it could mm-hmm. be that they thought I could be helpful. And there right. was some young kid working for the MDA that kind of just, well, have you registered on the website? Do you have a registration number? And I'm like, mm-hmm. you're not really getting this right now. You're not understanding what I'm trying to do here. And for all those reasons, I said, nah, I gotta do something. And there isn't a lot. There's a lot being done by those great organizations that are out there, but there's only two of them. And
yeah,
then I found
right.
a third. There was a small organization out in Long Island, which is where, you know, we're I'm in the New York area. And I had mm-hmm. a friend of mine that I had talked to who lived on the island. I said, yeah, we hear this Long Island Foundation for FSHD. And he said, no, but he actually called the person, this woman, Jennifer Burgess, and he got her name. And he spoke to her, and then I spoke to her. And she encouraged me to do something. And then what ended up happening was she wasn't really getting a lot of traction with her organization. So I told her that I wanted to start my own and put my name on it. And this is the sort of the vision I had for it. And what she had her idea was, why don't I just sort of change the name of mine and kind of partner with me?
Huh.
So that's what we did, and we had some people out there that became our board members, and these were the first people I'd ever spoken to or met that had FSHD, because I was never involved.
Right.
And then it's evolved from there. I mean, we kind of parted ways, Jennifer and I, a few years ago, but we continued the Carino Foundation as it is, and that's kind of the story of how it all came about. And I think the reason we went on our own and did this is because I just felt that I could have more of an impact from a fundraising and marketing standpoint and keep the story alive. And that, because that becomes a lot of the stories that are written now. And again, I was never even on social media until I started the foundation, because I said, I need to promote the foundation. And if I can keep my story alive through the foundation, it keeps the story out there and it keeps raising awareness. It keeps raising money. And, you know, I think it's important for the FSHD community be independent organizations. The FSH Society does a tremendous job, and especially with the patients. The support groups and things like that they serve an invaluable role, and they fund more research than any other of the organizations, aside from the government institutions.
Right.
And then you have the people out in Seattle and the great work being done by Terry and Rick Colella with FSH Friends of FSH Research, who we just partnered with to start our bike tour out there in Seattle. And they've been able to draw from that community. And they started the research of Dr. Tapscott at the Hutchinson Center out there in Seattle until Terry sort of drew Dr. Tapscott into it. He wasn't involved in FSHD research, and now he's one of the foremost authorities on the disease. We're not at that level yet. We're kind of just raising as much money as we can and then sort of giving them to the different researchers that our board has identified as people that are doing good work in the FSHD community. But I think it's important to have different groups because they draw from different areas. They they give you different options for researchers to get money from. I mean, what if you can't get any money from FSH Society and you have good work, but they don't have the money? They're already funding things that they want to fund, and you're a promising scientist who wants to get into the field. Well, now you've got some other options to get funding.
Right.
Or patients. I mean, they have different places they can go. I just encourage people that have FSHD to get involved. I mean, not enough people have this that are going to make a huge uproar. You can't just leave it up to everybody else. It's, What about 15,000 people have it in this country? I mean, it's a drop in the bucket. So
right.
We don't care about it. If we don't rise up and do something, then it's very hard. And I tell people, I don't care. Go start your own foundation. Go start your own thing. Give to any, give to me, give to FSA Society, give to Friends. But just try and get involved somehow. And, I love the MDA. They do great work, but for FSHD, it's important to deal with an FSHD-specific organization because that's where the breakthroughs have been made. That's where most of the money for FSHD research comes through. And, that's kind of the story in a long, very large nutshell.
Well, you do have some great events, too, that I wanted you to mention that you said are coming up. I know once you just teased it a little bit about that great bike ride that starts at the Space Needle and goes all the way to the Brooklyn Bridge, right? Can you tell us a little bit about that coast-to-coast event?
This, about a year ago at our gala, a friend of mine came up to me. He was a basketball coach, a women's basketball coach at St. Joseph's College in Brooklyn. My niece had played for him, and she was one of his great player, Samantha Reedus. I knew he was a biker. He didn't own a car. He's one of those guys that lives in Brooklyn, doesn't own a car. He rides his bike everywhere. And he'd go on these, 100 miles a day bike rides or someplace. And he corralled me and my brother-in-law, and he came to us and said, I got a great idea. I want to get a group of guys to ride their bikes across the country next year, and we'll raise money and awareness for your foundation. And I was like, wow, I mean, that's an ambitious
that's
undertaking,
yeah,
to say the least. But we you know, from there, the seeds were sown, and, you know, started talking about it soon thereafter, and got into the planning stages last fall, and then, you know, it somehow came to reality. And when it came time to, we were trying to plan it out when we were going to do it. We wanted to finish just before our gala in July, which is July 20th, which is another event.
Mm-hmm. Another event.
But we kind of backed the date from there, and we figured, all right, Memorial Day weekend is when we should start. And they said, well, you just have to figure out where we're going to start on the West Coast. And I said, well, you know, I had developed a relationship with Terry and Rick Colello out in Seattle and FSH Friends. And I said, we got to start out there. This will be a chance for us to do something with them and with that organization. And we'll start out there. And that's what we did last weekend. I was out in Seattle for the kickoff, and Terry and Rick were gracious to have all of this group, of which were 11 to start, six of which will make their way entirely across the country.
Wow.
Some the other five will be doing, I believe, about three stages. It's six stages is the whole thing, to from Seattle to Brooklyn. It's going to take 54 days, 46 cities, 4,200 miles. They took a little right turn and went to the west coast, to down to Portland, to touch their bikes in the Pacific Ocean, and then started to make their way back east. And it's not a race. It's a tour. It's a
right.
goodwill tour. It's, you know, they are averaging a little over 100 miles a day. But when we started to plan the route, I said, what I really, really love you to do is I'd love you to touch some of the places where there's FSHD research going on, where there's a community of FSHD people. And we started that in Seattle. We got a great tour with friends of FSH research, of Dr. Tapscott's lab. And we were all in a room with our riders and the scientists who work for Dr. Tapscott and Dr. Tapscott and Terry and Rick Colello. And we all introduced ourselves and talked to each other. And it was this triangle of what you do for a disease. There were these riders who had never met anybody other than me with FSHD, or really didn't put it into human terms what it means to raise money and awareness for a disease. Meeting these scientists who are brilliant people and dedicated people and looking to make a difference. And then, you know, me in the middle, the person they're all doing it for, representative of the nearly million people who have FSHD around the world. And it was an emotional meeting in that room. It was emotional for the scientist to hear me tell my story. It was emotional for these riders to hear these scientists talk about what they do. It was humbling. And it was just a great moment, I think, to sort of start things off. And, you know, as they've been going across now, they're into day five, and they left Portland today, and they're continuing through Oregon. And there's a support van that's going along with them, and they're staying in people's homes.
Wow.
We didn't want to make it where they go to hotels. We wanted to make it where go to people's homes, and they go to college campuses, and they go to churches where they're going to touch people along the way. And Frank Carbone is the man who's running it. Frank is going to become a little reality star. If you go to our Facebook page, the Chris Carino Foundation Facebook page, we leave all these Facebook Live videos every day. And even on our website, there's a link to the page that has all the particulars for the ride. You can see the whole route and all the people who are riding and how to donate. But Frank's been doing all these little, you know, videos of the people that they meet and the little events that they go to. And so they're reaching some scientists as well. They're going to be in Reno, Nevada next week, and they're going to see Dr. Peter Jones, who has gone from UMass out to Reno now. And we funded Dr. Jones in the past, and he's going to have some events and show them around Reno. They're going to have a day off in Reno. They're going to make their way across to Denver, where they'll meet some scientists, to Salt Lake City, to Kansas City, where I know Jeff Statlin's got his work. They're going to go to Jeff's lab, and they're going to go to Dr. Scott Harper's lab and his people at Ohio State, where we have funding going on. And so all these different places, they're going to get to meet these scientists, and these scientists get to see them. And I think it's just a great little goodwill tour as they make their way across the country. And then they will end up on July 18th in my town in New Jersey, where I live, in Marlborough, New Jersey. We'll have a little event for them. And then the last day, they'll ride from Marlborough, New Jersey to Brooklyn. And mm-hmm. come across the Brooklyn Bridge and up the road to Barclays Center. And Invent Productions has been our major sponsor, and they're a company that puts on big events. And my friend Scott Colliter, and they're going to put on this big event for us at Barclays Center. And we hope to get a whole slew of riders that are just going to ride the last part of it into Barclays Center and have a big, make a lot of noise in the neighborhood and get some media attention. And
that sounds fantastic.
But I want to say that, you know, Invent has been a great partner of ours, and friends of FSH Research, and Terry and Rick out in Seattle are a sponsor, and they did such a great job in getting us off to a great start, and were so gracious and even helped us out in accommodations in Washington and Oregon, down in Portland, where there was a great event last night. And they'll be with us throughout the course of this. And Bay Ridge Toyota gave us the van, so there's been and a great individual named Steve Summers, who has a company as well, that has helped us, as a sponsor. So, Vigon, which has been, we've been getting so much help, and it's been a great thing so far.
It sounds like a massive undertaking. Sounds like you had some great help, some great sponsorship. What a great way to build all that up, and the great community, it sounds like, that has your back. And that's just, it's just amazing. It was amazing just to read about the ride itself going that distance, but now to hear all that's involved, I mean, that's just phenomenal. Go ahead.
No, I was saying, I'm going to try and meet them at some points along the mm-hmm. way. And I just hope that, more people will now know about FSH around the country.
Absolutely.
It's just 2 months that this van and these riders are going to be going around, going across the country. And that's what we're trying to do. And again, that's where, making it personal inspires things like this. I mean, we have another thing where there's a news producer at WCBS Radio here in New York, speaking of, radio and broadcasters, who mm-hmm. happened to be friends with his wife and my sister, were very good friends. And he runs these he participates in these Ironman triathlons. He did a half one last year. He's doing a full one this year. And he just said, knowing me, and he wanted to raise money for our foundation. He was personally touched by my story. And he said, that keeps me going when I'm training and I'm thinking about what mm-hmm. I need to focus on when I'm training. And he's raised over $6,000 for us the last couple of years with that. I mean, again, making it personal, that's why Frank Carbone is riding a bike across the country. If having a name and a face to the disease and the organization is kind of what inspires these people to do that. And that's kind of where the niche that our group falls into.
Absolutely. Now, where can our listeners either follow this race, learn about other events that are going on? What is the website and other places that they can find you and get more information?
So it's chriscarinofoundation.org. We're on Twitter and Facebook as well. Our Facebook page is, a great chance for people to get updated mm-hmm. on those videos, like I said. But we do have a page. If you click, if you go on chriscarinofoundation.org, you go down to the bike ride. There's a link there where you click, and it takes you to a page that has all the information about where the riders are going, how people can get involved if they want to as well. You see all the cities that we're going to. If somebody's out there, maybe that didn't know about this, that hears about it now, and we're coming through your neighborhood, and you want to throw a little barbecue for everybody or do something, you know, that would be great. Have a little fundraiser. You know, we'd welcome that. And then it's all going to culminate with our dinner, which it's going to be our 7th annual event, which is our main fundraiser every year. And that's at Russo's on the Bay in Howard Beach, New York. And that's a chance for it's a party. It's not a gala in a sense of a lot of speeches or, it's a big party with a DJ and a lot of food and drinks and great
Sounds
prizes
good.
And people have a tremendous time. Yeah. And people have a great time. And that's why we've, you know, year in and year out have had over 400 people at this event. So, that will be, very festive this year because we'll welcome our riders back to town. We'll honor them. And, you know, have a great party. I actually hear a lot of the other FSHD groups are going to be sending people to this event this year. The champions, if you've ever heard of the FSHD champions, all the kind of groups around the world are going to try and have a little impromptu champions meeting there as well. So it's a great thing. I hope every people in the FSHD community will rally around and I really, Tim, I hope that everything we're doing, I just hope it will touch people in a way that if they haven't already gotten involved, that they'll get involved.
Right.
And people that, you know, I'm talking about people in the FSHD community. And then for those who maybe don't know about FSHD, you'll start to get to know some of the people who are affected by this. And you'll learn to care about them and want to help them because it is a terrible disease. Some people are mildly affected and don't show the signs as much and it's easy to live with. But for so many, it's very hard to live with.
Absolutely.
And people can't care about something if they don't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to let as many people and this is your job too with what you're doing with your radio show. Let people know about what it's all about, and then we can get them to care, and then we can find a treatment and a cure.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Chris, for joining us. I loved your story. I'm glad you shared it with us and taking the time out. We do very much appreciate you and all the hard work you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. I appreciate it.
Have a good night.
Okay. Thanks, Tim.
Okay. That was Chris Carino, and you can go to the chriscarinofoundation.org and learn more about all the events that are going on that he is that he's doing. Fantastic interview. Had a lot of fun listening to him. I know we're running past the hour, but that's okay because I kind of plan for that from time to time. You know, I like to consider myself kind of a planner. So why don't we take our final break. We come back. We'll close up shop. Go over maybe a couple of little events that are happening out there and close it up. You're listening to the FSH Society Radio Show.
FSHD is one of the most common forms of muscular dystrophy. It's a degenerative disease that weakens muscles in the face, shoulders, upper back, and legs. FSHD robs you of your smile and makes simple tasks nearly impossible to perform. FSHD affects hundreds of thousands of people, but most have never met another patient. Many have not even been diagnosed. Someone you know may be living with FSHD. Let them know they are not alone and that we're making real advances toward a treatment. You can help by going to our website, fshsociety.org/cureFSHD, and share the photos and facts about the disease using the hashtag CureFSHD. By simply raising awareness, you could change someone's life and help us get closer to a cure.
Hey, welcome back to the show, FSH Society Radio, and thanks for being here. We just listened to our featured guest, Chris Carino, who was on the show here talking about the Chris Carino Foundation. You can visit that at chriscarinofoundation.org and learn more about what's going on with his big gala event. He has, it's not a race, but it is a coast-to-coast for FSHD ride that's happening right now. Go ahead and follow the route and see where those riders are at. Maybe welcome into your home, as he mentioned, and start a barbecue. I'm going to actually check it out. I don't know if they're going to travel this far up north to Wisconsin because they might get cold up here riding. But I'm going to check it out nonetheless and see if I can offer a little help there. Other events going on. I wanted to get to those before we closed up shop. Big events going on really in the very near future here coming up. We have the Tucson Member Meetup Saturday, June 3rd in Tucson, Arizona. The Chicago FSH Society Meeting Saturday, June 3rd in Schaumburg, Illinois at a Starbucks. Minnesota FSHD Spring Gathering. It's a picnic on June 4th. That sounds like a lot of fun. And that's in Shakopee, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, Minnesota. So those are a couple of big events. Of course, as we all know, we're getting excited and ready for the World FSHD Day on June 20th. So get your fundraisers together, get things going, and get some money and awareness raised. Go ahead and we want to get those orange smiley faces going and start hashtagging that out. World FSHD Day is June 20th. A big event that I plan on going to, even though it's a little bit of a ride for me, but I can deal with it. FSH Society has the FSH Society Family Day in Columbus, Ohio, June 11th from 12 to 4 p.m. at the Nationwide Children's Hospital. So if you want to meet me and shake hands and talk a bit, please do so, and I'll meet you there. We're going to have some great speakers there like Kevin Flanagan, Scott Q. Harper, and so many more. As I look across the list of who will be speaking. So big event coming up there. Well, I know we ran over tonight, and I'm okay with it if you're okay with it. And next month we'll have another episode for you, so go ahead and follow us on Twitter at FSH Society or FSHSociety.org. We'll have posts of the featured guests that we'll have in store for that episode and so much more there available for you. If you want to chat with me, please do so. You can send me emails directly at recroomshow@gmail.com. Love to hear from you and hear your story. If you just want to, you know, share your thoughts, your opinions with me, be happy to hear from you that way as well. Want to email the show, fsh@fshsociety.org. Thank you all for joining me this evening. Straight to bed with you all. Thanks for staying up late and listening to the whole show. Our special thank you to Chris Carino for joining us, a fantastic guest. And I know we'll have him back in the future. Take care. God bless.